This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. How much do you depend on the internet? Do you need it for your job, doing schoolwork? How about for your business? Do you depend on it even more than you need your home landline phone, even if you still have one of those? Later this month, the FCC will be voting on giving the internet Title II protection, making it a utility like your home phone. And if that happens, many say that means that net neutrality, the war over net neutrality, is over and the people won. But not so fast. What questions do you have about protecting the internet? Are you worried about government regulation of the web? Call in. The number is 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at @tprsource. With us to talk about this, Leticia Ozuna, former city council member who founded SABN, the San Antonio Area Broadband Network, and Sarah Morris, senior policy counsel at the New America Foundation. And we're joined by Christopher Mitchell, director of the Community Broadband Networks at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. Welcome to The Source, all of y'all.
Thank you.
Okay, so Leticia, let me ask you a hyper-local question first off the bat, and then we'll move on to the broader things about what's happening with net neutrality and Title II. So what happened with Google Fiber in San Antonio? We were not named one of the lucky cities to get Google Fiber.
Well, not in this round. So I think Google Fiber, or Google, expected a lot of steps for all of the cities and regions that were going to be recipients of that round of selection. And we're so geographically spread out, as well as the level of infrastructure that would need to go in was so high, that we did not make this cut. That's not to say that it's completely off the table. But I do want to make sure that everyone understands that Google Fiber provides cost relief for residential, for homeowners, for home access. It's not going to provide access and cost relief for our clinics, for our schools, for our universities, for our hospitals. And so, you know, Google Fiber will be great for the pocketbook when they come, whenever that timeline is. But it only alleviates some of the lack of competitive, a competition that's in San Antonio. So I don't think we're out of the count. There's too many reasons for San Antonio. There's too many assets and too many resources that San Antonio brings to the table for Google to count us out. It's just not this round that's just not going to happen for us in this round.
So, but using what SABN is trying to do, your organization is to bring those high speed connections to those hubs, like the universities and hospitals.
There is still room in the equation for relief to be provided to our school districts, to our clinics, to our universities. We still don't have a solution that is high capacity, low cost that can be provided by a publicly owned network.
So you're saying, let's not wait for Google Fiber. We can do this on our own
right
now.
Yeah, we could do it right now.
And we're going to have to do it sooner or later.
Yep.
So why not now?
Exactly.
All right, moving on. Title II, the FCC, they want to give or thinking about giving the internet Title II protection, making it a utility. So Sarah Moore, senior policy counsel at New America Foundation, what does that mean?
So thanks. What this means is we prefer not to think about it as treating it as a utility. I think that's helpful framing for some folks, but
it's good for me because, what do I know? Nothing.
But we really see this as a limited light touch approach by the commission to implement the types of longstanding principles that have governed our communications network for over a century, and just to extend those principles in the form of specific rules to the internet.
Okay, so what rules are we talking about, Christopher?
Well, in the case that Sarah's talking about, an issue of net neutrality, those rules have to do with whether or not companies like Comcast, the companies that are providing internet service, whether or not they would have to meet a certain bar before charging different prices for similar services. So if the question would be if Comcast would be able to, for instance, charge Netflix more than a different provider that was doing a similar service. But when it comes to net neutrality, I think Sarah Morris is the expert on this group.
Right. But is the comparison to the home phone, let's just continue that metaphor for a second. So under, if we didn't have net neutrality, then certain companies could set up certain deals with internet providers. So like, imagine if I wanted to call up a pizza to get a, you know, on my phone, and I call up a pizza chain, and say the phone companies had one deal with the pizza chain and not with the other one. So if I call X, brand X, I get a busy signal every 50% of the time, and the other one, my call will go straight through. Is that a comparison if we don't have net neutrality and one company's got a sweetheart deal and the other company doesn't? Sarah?
That's a great comparison. And another one might be that when you call one pizza company, you're just rerouted or you're blocked from that company, and they say, oh, well, you know, you tried to call Domino's, for example, but we can't direct you to Domino's, but here's Pizza Hut instead, because Pizza Hut has negotiated some sort of deal with the phone company in that hypothetical situation. And so it really takes control away from the user who is just trying to access whatever content that they want to, and puts it in the hands of the internet service providers and in the context of whatever deals they decide to strike with content companies.
Right. And so was that a problem? Was that actually happening, sir?
Sure. We've seen lots of examples of situations where companies have either blocked certain content online or throttled. That was the case of BitTorrent several years ago, where if you were trying to use a certain service, your experience was degraded, while if you tried to access some other website, it would load fine. Most recently, we've seen an even more onerous, I think, type of behavior where while internet service providers are actually trying to negotiate to extract payments from content providers, they're refusing to upgrade the interconnection ports. And so the service that you pay for every month suddenly becomes really terrible, and you have no way as a consumer to know what's causing that. You're basically held hostage while all of these disputes about payments are negotiated.
Right. So this idea of what is broadband has just recently changed, Christopher. The FCC voted to up what broadband is. So does that mean am I no longer getting broadband at home?
Well, it'll be curious to see whether or not the cable and telephone companies change their advertisements, because they've certainly been calling everything that has a pulse broadband. But in fact, the definition of broadband is much mightier now, and many forms of DSL would no longer count as broadband under this definition, which I think is really important, because it means that if companies want to advertise having a fast connection to the Internet, they increasingly have to actually provide a faster connection to the Internet.
Right. So it went from, 3 megs a second to much more than that.
Right. It went from 4x1, which is 4 down and 1 up from your computer and to your computer. And now it's 25 megabits toward your computer and 3 megabits away from your computer, which is just about a factor of 6 and 3, depending on the downstream and the upstream.
All right. So if you're not getting that, you're not getting broadband. Okay. We're going to continue our conversation about the future of the Internet, what the FCC could do. If you've got questions or comments, we want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX on February 26th. We're looking forward to a vote with the FCC, Federal Communications Commission, about whether or not to extend Title II protections to the Internet. We're not sure what the proposal includes. It hasn't been made public yet, but we're looking forward towards things like no blocking on the Internet, no throttling, no paid prioritization, open Internet conduct standards, and transparency. And these are things that matter to a lot of people, because we all depend upon the Internet, and we all probably should have access to the same Internet. With me to talk about that, Leticia Ozuna, former city council member. She helped found SABIN in San Antonio, the San Antonio Area Broadband Network. Sarah Morris, the senior policy counsel at the New American Foundation. And Christopher Mitchell, the director of the Community Broadband Networks at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. So, Leticia, let me ask you, if the Internet is made a utility, what does that mean towards bringing actual high-speed Internet to parts of, like, say, San Antonio that are still, dependent on old copper wiring, and they don't even give you, you can't even get high-speed internet there.
In some neighborhoods. So what I find most interesting about the Title II reclassification is part of the ruling, there's an anticipation that there will be an opening up of the ruling to challenge state restrictions on municipal broadband. In San Antonio, we are held under restrictions from the state of Texas to be able to have publicly supplied internet access to our residents, whether they're rural or urban. Oklahoma, the state of Oklahoma got around that. Their state ledge wasn't so punitive. And in certain rural areas of Oklahoma, they've ceded over part of the publicly owned infrastructure so that rural Oklahomans would have fast internet access. I'm not sure why the state of Texas seems to think that they're protecting people by putting in such onerous restrictions on municipalities like San Antonio from providing fast access to areas that have been underserved and will continue to be underserved if we follow this the market case for internet. It's going to be really hard to make a market case for internet for a hospital on the east side or a clinic on the south side. So I think that now is the time to start talking about opening up our capabilities for our municipality to provide fast, cheap service to our businesses, our schools, our clinics, and our residences. I mean, it seems like now is a perfect time to start that conversation. We have the investment. It's already been made. In fact, the city now controls the equivalent, about 50 independent high-capacity networks. In some cases, the speeds don't even match what you can buy on the private market. So now's the time to be talking about it.
Right, so that's something else that the FCC would be voting on, possibly on the 26th. Christopher Mitchell, what about cities who want to start their own municipal networks?
Well, the interesting thing is this is even a broader universe than that. San Antonio was one of the founding members of an organization called Next Century Cities, which is a very exciting organization with mayors from all over the country that some are interested in building their own networks and some are focused on partnerships. And state laws can get in the way of all of those. So the FCC is looking at these two petitions. The city of Wilson in North Carolina and the city of Chattanooga in Tennessee have asked the federal government to overturn aspects of their state law that prevents them from expanding their existing very successful gigabit networks to their neighbors. So it's a situation where the city has this great network. Cable and telephone lobbyists were able to create restrictions in the state legislature that prevented them from being able to expand those networks. It's a restriction not unlike the one that Leticia just noted about that is present in Texas. And we're about to hear the federal government say that using its powers that Congress has given it, that the FCC can overturn state barriers that prohibit competition from the city government.
All right, let's go to the phone lines. And if you want to join our conversation, you're invited. The number is 210-614-8980. Hugh is on the line. Hugh, welcome to The Source.
Yeah, I doubt if anybody in San Antonio in a home outside of business has broadband. I'm looking at a speed test right now on my Uber's connection, and that's 12. I don't think anybody has 25.
Right, so you're saying that if you think you have broadband, then not anymore because they've changed the speed limits. You're now in a slow lane, right?
Well, it wasn't that fast to begin with. America and Texas are some of the slowest internet around. You go to places like Korea or Japan, and they're hauling, but not here.
All right, Hugh, thank you for that update. Appreciate you calling in. So, Sarah, let me ask you about that. What do companies make more money when their internet is slow? I mean, why not make it as fast as it can be?
Well, there's lots of reasons that internet isn't as fast. We've actually done a lot of research comparing, as Hugh pointed out, the cost of broadband in the United States and the speeds that you received versus the cost of broadband and the speeds you receive abroad. And we have found in our research that with the exception of certain communities with municipal networks, that customers in the United States are actually getting a much worse deal than their global counterparts. Now, why that's the case, there's lots of reasons. Building networks is expensive, and when there's already an existing customer base, it dampens the incentive to continue to invest in that upgrade, in those upgrades, because you have sort of a captured market already. And in a lot of cases, there just aren't a lot of competitive options for consumers. And so not a lot of competitive pressure on companies to continually upgrade their networks and improve their service. Where we see community networks in place, we actually see the opposite. We see much better incentives and pressures towards greater speeds, higher speeds, and more affordable prices for those speeds.
So then the short answer, the reason why the internet isn't faster is because they don't have to go faster. They've got a captured market.
Yes.
Okay.
In many instances, yes.
All right. But so Leticia, let me get back to this thing about parts of San Antonio in the city, south side, west side, east side, not having good internet.
Yeah.
I've had friends who want to move to some of these neighborhoods. People say, hey, I love these neighborhoods, but you say there's a great property there. You can live for cheap. It's really cool. But the internet's not good. And for a lot of people, that's a deal breaker.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So in San Antonio, we're effectively a duopoly. There's only two offerings in many neighborhoods. There's a third offering in others where the price point is much lower and the access is much greater. But even this offering is only sporadically in the city, mainly for the major players to maintain their competitive framework, that we are not under monopolistic conditions. But you can go and pull a grandmother's bill on the south side, like I have, and look at the connection speed and the channel offering, and pull a bill on the northeast side. And I mean, there's just no comparison. I don't know a nice way of calling it gouging, but it's definitely double percentage points higher for lower speeds. So, very high bills for low speed, low channel selection. And I mean, that just has been the status quo in San Antonio for a long time.
Christopher Mitchell over at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, how does bad internet hurt a community?
Well, I think one of the biggest fears is that without good internet access, you're not going to have businesses that want to invest there. And so maybe your existing businesses will have to leave town to get good access. I've met people who, when they're relocating for a job, they felt like if you have the breadwinner wants to work in City A and City B is 40 miles away, but it's the best place to get good internet access, well, then the children demand that you live in the city with a good internet access, and suddenly you have a big commute. So there's a quality of life issue, which means that your housing values plummet. It's not to the case yet that not having good internet access is like not having electricity, but it'll take time, and that will be the case because people will become increasingly used to it. Rural populations where they have access to high internet often don't see the population drop off year after year that communities that lack access do, because kids go away to university and then they don't want to come back after they get used to those connections. So there's so many different ways. And then I would say that just on the opposite side, on the hopeful side, is that when you have a locally owned network, then your community is even more vibrant, because not only do you have great internet access, but you're keeping more of that money within the community, rather than half of your check leaving the city to go to shareholders scattered across the East Coast. You have that money staying within the community and bouncing around and having a multiplier effect.
Sarah Morris, as people may be living in areas that have bad internet, they may turn to mobile internet as a solution. How is the Title II vote going to impact mobile internet?
So that's an interesting question. For the first time, net neutrality has been on the table in a debate for over a decade, and the FCC has historically declined to extend those protections to mobile. For the first time this year, we are expecting the FCC to both implement strong rules using clear authority and to extend that same regulatory framework to mobile access as well. So that means that when you are on your cell phone and on a Wi-Fi connection at home, but then you suddenly move to a Verizon 4G connection when you walk outside, that you don't suddenly lose those net neutrality protections just because your phone switched networks.
Right. But also with mobile this protections for the mobile internet, they can no longer pick winners and losers. Like, I no longer can get a free deal with unlimited data with Spotify. It's all got to be the same.
We don't know exactly. That's an issue we known out here called zero rating, and we don't know exactly how those specific deals will be addressed. The details of the FCC's proposal are still being finalized, and we don't have all of them yet. But I think it would make it harder for companies to cut deals with certain providers for a fee to deliver, you know, service without data caps or faster service over their 4G network to consumers.
So the telecoms have certainly been crying like this is going to be terrible, that they don't want to see the FCC take this action. But when the FCC did move forward with this, saying that they would take this vote, that we saw a surge in the market with those stocks. So how did that work out, Sarah?
You know, I think that the market's looking for certainty here, and we have an option now on the table. The chairman has been sort of coalescing around that option for the past couple of months, and everyone's just sort of waiting for this vote to happen. And so I think that as we get closer to that date, the market will respond to the fact that we're nearing a place of certainty, and that companies, big and small, will know what to expect under these rules, rather than this period of uncertainty that we've had while the rules have been overturned and no one knowing exactly what the commission is going to do.
So if we receive some certainty from the FCC with this vote, does that mean that we won't see this this decision go to a courtroom, Sarah?
Well, I think that the cable companies and telcos have made it quite clear that they are going to sue no matter what the commission does. So I would expect that the next stop will be the federal courts. We think that the FCC at this point is taking the strongest legal path forward that they have ever in the history of net neutrality. And so, you know, we're confident that they'll have the sort of winning hand when that happens. But, yes, we're definitely expecting this to move to a legal challenge as it did in 2010.
In the meantime, we'll wait for that vote on February 26th. Thank you all so much, Leticia Zuna, former City Council member, Sarah Morris, Senior Policy Counsel at New America Foundation, Chris Mitchell, Director of Community Broadband Networks at Institute for Local Reliance. This is The Source on KSTX.